Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Hey, greetings, folks, and welcome to the Fallon Forum. Happy April. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe. Gateway brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate personalized service. Check out Gateway Marketing Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry, who's got 23 years of experience in the real estate business. Joe is also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Contact Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. Hey, thank you to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. Hope you all survived St. Patrick's Day. We did, barely. Hey, my first guest today is Randy Evans. He's a former editorial page editor for the Des Moines Register and the president of the Iowa Freedom of Information Council, and still very active and still writing very provocative columns, a lot of them to do with the First Amendment. Randy, welcome to the program.
And it's good to be with you.
Now, we want to talk about this situation with the Des Moines City Council and the new police chief, but I just saw out today your column about another city in Iowa, a small city, Newton, Iowa, where a disgruntled Newton resident, Mr. Peterson, took his concerns to the city council a while back and was basically told to shut up, sit down and shut up.
He literally
didn't. He was arrested, and now that case has become a real First Amendment bellwether for our, you know, our conversation. What are your thoughts on that situation?
Well, I think it's going to end up costing the taxpayers of Newton money because of the actions of the mayor and police chief in trying to silence Noah Peterson, who went to the city council, spoke calmly. He didn't cause a disruption, but he was critical of city officials in the operation of the police department.
Critical to the extent of name-calling?
Initially, no, he was just expressing his concerns, and in a subsequent meeting where he went back after being arrested and handcuffed and charged with a crime, he went back to another council meeting, and he said the mayor and the police were acting like fascists, which, you know, you're allowed to criticize government in the United States. That's what the whole First Amendment's all about.
Right.
You know, you're not the only people who get to speak at a city council meeting don't have to be there to praise city government or city fathers. And it took a Jasper County magistrate not long to find him not guilty on the criminal charges, but that has now led to a civil rights lawsuit against the city that Mr. Peterson has filed. The chief federal judge in the Southern District of Iowa has said basically that the city officials violated Mr. Peterson's First Amendment rights, and now the only question is how much they're going to have to pay.
Wow. And so what was the original bee that got under Peterson's bonnet, so to speak? What bothered him that compelled him to come to the city council meeting and complain?
He was troubled by the way some police officers in Newton were treating friends of his. He He was concerned that a police officer in Newton had been accused of domestic abuse allegations, and the sort of opinions that people might have in a community like Newton is, you know, where they want to express their opinions about how they think government ought to be acting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I remind groups when I speak to them around the state, government belongs to the citizens. It does not belong to the elected and employed officials of a government.
I thought it belonged to the special interests that funded their campaigns.
Well, that's a topic for another discussion.
Okay, right, right.
You know,
so this transpired in Newton, what, last year, I believe.
But the federal judge's ruling just came out last month.
And so more recently, we've had another First Amendment concern arise in the city of Des Moines, again, a much bigger city of over 200,000 people. And this was relevant not to comments made at a meeting by a resident, but to the procedure by which the Des Moines City Council opted to hire a new police chief.
Perhaps.
Perhaps. Do I misstate it?
No. Because we don't really know.
Ah.
I mean, so what this involves is the decision by the city council to pay a now former major on the Des Moines Police Department, Lily Parker, $975,000 to settle demands that she had made in a letter that you and I and every other citizen of Des Moines is not allowed to see, in which she apparently, her attorney made allegations about discriminatory treatment or mistreatment.
She's female, she's black.
And
she's also got a long tenure on the police department, correct?
She's been on the department 20-plus years. She was a candidate for the recent vacancy for police chief. And
she was one of eight, I believe, correct?
One of the eight finalists.
Right.
And in the Des Moines Civil Service Commission, which went through interviewed and scoring the application, she ranked at the top of the list.
You mean first?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She didn't get the job. In January of this year, her attorney sent what is called a demand letter to the city, expressing concern about the way she was treated. It's unclear we don't know whether it was treated by her peers on the police department. We don't know whether it was the command staff at the police department. We don't know whether it was officers who were under her. We don't know whether it was administrators at City Hall or the city council members. We don't know, but it's the city council agreed to pay her $975,000.
Hush money, essentially?
Well, the agreement, I wouldn't use that term, but I would point out that the agreement includes an extensive confidentiality clause that prohibits her or any employees of the city from commenting on either the contents of her letter or the allegations she made.
Hush money.
If you want to be simple.
Yeah, I do. I love being simple. Okay, so let me go back one more question. Who is ultimately responsible for deciding who to hire as the new chief? Obviously, the recommendation of the civil servant, what's it called again? The
Civil Service Commission.
Civil Service Commission. That didn't amount to much. She was ranked first out of eight, and apparently
she
went beyond that.
Chief McTaggart, who was selected by the city manager, Scott Sanders, basically with the approval of the city council, he ranked seventh on the list of eight.
So it's the city manager who made the decision to skip over.
Correct. But what has been made public, which is very little, it is not obvious whether it was the city council or whether it was the city's decision to pick a different person as police chief, or whether it was ongoing treatment that she had received as a major on the police department.
Okay.
And that's from that's where my concern is, that the taxpayers of Des Moines are the ones who are going to come up with $975,000.
Right.
But crazy. They're being kept in the dark about what the reasons are. We don't know whether this was a very logical, reasonable decision on the part of the city council. We don't know whether the officers on the Des Moines Police Department, we don't know who or how this mistreatment occurred.
So the city manager recommended Michael McTaggart as the new police chief over Lily Parker, and the city council had to ratify that recommendation from the...
In effect.
And what was the city council vote?
I don't think there was any opposition to it.
Okay, it was unanimous.
Yeah.
Okay. And is it, and given the kerfuffle that you have raised, and rightfully, and thank you, you're one of our strongest defenders of the First Amendment here in Iowa. And given the additional attention that you've brought to this, has any city council member said, yeah, maybe we should look at this again?
No, because the agreement that they signed, that Scott Sanders signed at the authorization of the city council, basically closes the case on this. And, you know, if the city were to, try to back out of it, it could, I'm assuming, lead to litigation. And to me, this is government right now. Local government in Iowa is under tremendous pressure to do all that the citizens want it to do at a time when the legislature is kind of tightening the spigot on property taxes.
The legislature and other restrictions coming from the federal government.
Yeah.
And that's affecting states all over the country.
So when you spend almost $1 million without any explanation of the rationale or the basis for this decision, I think it undermines public respect and credibility for government.
Yeah, it sure does. And so did the vote to put to appoint McTaggart as the new police chief, did that happen concurrently with the decision to give Lily Parker nearly $1 million?
No.
Were separate rulings, separate decisions.
Chief McTaggart was hired in October of 2024.
Well, that long ago.
And so the concerns that were voiced in the letter to the city manager by Major Parker's attorney, that came in January,
mm-hmm.
and the letter became public when the settlement was ready for ratification.
Okay.
So there was not an opportunity for the public to weigh in, to ask questions, to demand answers. By the time the public had the opportunity, it was a done deal.
Nobody spoke at the meeting when McTaggart was first appointed.
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
And I think Chief McTaggart had a very strong reputation of service. His tenure was about as long as Major Parker's.
Right. Even though he was listed seventh by the Civil Service Commission.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me, it's hard to sort all this out, but you probably have filed more Freedom of Information requests than anybody I know. Possibly anybody, possibly more than anyone else in Iowa. Will a Freedom of Information request turn up the information we need to understand what really went on behind the scenes and why the local taxpayers are on the hook for nearly $1 million?
I don't believe that a public records request is going to have any success. Until the legislature changes the law to to require there to be transparency about these kinds of significant expenses that government is entering into, and until the people of Des Moines stand up and tell the city council that, and the Des Moines School Board as well, we can talk about that some other time,
right, yes.
But until the public rises up and says, you know, this is our money you're spending, we demand to know what's going on and to make their opinions known when they cast their ballots for city council members.
It seems to be a problem across various levels of government, and not just in Iowa, too, but around the country. I mean, here you've mentioned the City Council of Des Moines, of course, City Council in Newton, Iowa, the Des Moines School Board, which was that was quite a fiasco, and also Polk County, the government in Polk County. What's transpired there in terms of some level of secrecy and some really big payouts to kind of keep everybody happy.
Well, and I will give you the shorthand version of the Des Moines School Board. You're thinking of the superintendent. I'm thinking of the chief academic officer, who is the number two person, Robert London. His contract runs out at the end of June. He's being paid $195,000 a year. He has not worked. He has not set foot in his office at the Des Moines School District since October.
And he's getting paid nearly $200,000.
He's getting paid nearly $200,000 to not work. His contract, he will be done. His resignation takes effect then. There has been no explanation for why the school district is paying him when they say there is no misconduct.
And you've asked.
I have asked.
And what's their response? We don't have to tell you?
That there was no misconduct. They're saying there was no misconduct on his part. And so, but their answer is that they're not going to tell us.
And how can they not tell you legally? They're a publicly funded,
you're asking
body.
Excellent questions, Ed.
Well, that's why they pay me the big. Oh, they don't pay me the big bucks. Never mind. But yeah, why?
Well,
how do they get away with this?
And because in the working world, you would not be allowed. They would not pay you.
To not work.
If you were resigning through no and you were not guilty of any infractions, they would expect you either to your paycheck to end when you walked out the door, or to continue to show up and do work. Because $200,000, you think about, you know, a Des Moines school teacher who's making $50,000 to $55,000 a year. That's a lot of teachers, and the Des Moines School District is under similar kinds of financial pressure. The people in the community need to stand up and take charge of their government.
And what kind of response have you had from the local residents as you raised awareness of this issue?
Lots of feedback.
All positive? I mean,
yeah, generally, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anybody saying, Randy, you're off base, they did exactly what they were supposed to do?
No, the closest it would come would be responses along the lines of, I'm sure they must have had a good reason, but that's hardly a rousing defense.
Please share that good reason with us.
Well, and I think that's what the citizens are entitled to.
Is there any way to get the city council to revisit their decision and vote, you know, just force a vote on whether they can, you know, be more transparent about?
I'm stumped. I think what is more likely to happen is there. You may well see other Des Moines police officers bringing similar kinds of lawsuits, and if I were the attorney for one of those police officers, I would get Lily Parker on the witness stand. And that is the only way I know of that she's going to be obligated to share her experiences.
So there will be city council elections in Des Moines next year, 2027. Do you see this an issue? This is an issue that candidates might raise and that might resonate with the public?
I think it certainly could resonate because, you know, there are lots of expenses that government has that people have concerns about. They're concerned about the size of city government. City officials are concerned about how to make the budget balanced. But when you spend $1 million and you don't share with the taxpayers, you know, it is not instilling trust and confidence in our leadership.
And it's not the way nearly all of us expect the First Amendment to be understood and practiced.
I would agree. It's, you know, the government belongs to the people and people ought to be able to engage with their government.
All right. Hey, Randy, thank you so much for joining us.
It's always a pleasure, Ed.
Folks, Randy Evans of the Iowa Freedom of Information Council. And speaking of the First Amendment, when we come back from a short break, we're going to talk about the No Kings movement and other efforts to make sure that the public's voice gets heard locally and across the country. Back in a minute with you on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Catholic Peace Ministry. CPM promotes the peaceful resolution to war and also the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrom Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrom and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry. All right, Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Maybe you participated in a No Kings rally or protest this past weekend. Apparently, 8 million Americans did. That's huge. That's a lot of people turning out. There were 3,300 events across the U.S. Wow. Here in Iowa, 50. That's a lot for Iowa. And turnout again, 8 million people. That's up from 7 million people at the No Kings rallies back in October of last year, and up from 5 million people at the initial No Kings actions in June of last year. So there is momentum, and of course there is pushback. I don't know if Trump actually said anything about it, but one of his spokespeople, Abigail Jackson. We know an Abby Jackson, but I don't think it's the same one. she said, quote, "The only people who care about these Trump derangement therapy sessions are the reporters who are paid to cover them." I mean, that's predictable. So much of political diatribe on both the left and the right is meaningless. And yeah, that's great. Dismissed it as a Trump derangement therapy session. That's cute. And the reporters who are paid to cover them. Some reporters are paid. A lot of reporters don't get paid anymore, you know? And certainly, at least you didn't call the protesters themselves paid participants. Because if they had been paid, boy, a lot of money would have been made on Saturday. I'll tell you that. So I was interested in the New York Times take on it. they had five takeaways from the event, and I'm going to share them with you. Well, and then we'll talk about it a bit. One was the war seemed to galvanize younger voters. That may be. Many protesters said the war had brought them out on Saturday, and at least in some places, the conflict appeared to be motivating younger people. That may be. I mean, there were the rally in Des Moines, and again, we had about 5,000 people here, was pretty mixed. I mean, I don't know how to say. I think it was just a pretty broad swath of the population in terms of age and all levels. But that's good to know. It's good to know that young people are upset about what's happening in Iran. The second point that the New York Times makes is Trump's immigration crackdown remains a focus. And that was especially noticeable in Minneapolis, St. Paul. There was a huge, I don't even know how many people, I didn't find that, but there was a huge, absolutely enormous rally and action in Minneapolis, St. Paul over the weekend. The governor spoke, Governor Tim Walz. So Bernie Sanders and Bruce Springsteen also there. And of course, those two are really good at drawing in a big crowd. The third point that the New York Times made was there were also dueling protests at near Mar-a-Lago in Florida, Trump's mansion, Trump's palace. There were thousands of protesters gathered not far from there, and that included Emily Gregory. She's a Democrat and she's a first-time candidate, and she won that upset victory last week in Florida for a state legislative seat. That is a district that was carried by Trump by 11 points. So that's pretty incredible. And Trump, of course, you probably heard this. Trump voted by mail, and then he declared that voting by mail was cheating. But I guess it's only cheating when someone else does it. So the interesting thing about the No Kings rally in Florida outside of near Mar-a-Lago was there were counter-protesters. I don't remember seeing any counter-protesters in Des Moines. Maybe there were, but I didn't see them. There weren't a very big presence if they were there. But there were counter-protesters at Mar-a-Lago, and they unfurled a huge pro-Trump flag. And the two sides were chanting at each other. Good. That's good First Amendment activity there, folks. Thank you on both sides. So the New York Times' fourth point was that midterm candidates came out in force. So candidates not just for local office, but for the U.S. Senate, U.S. House, are taking these actions very seriously and turning out and showing where they stand. Democrats also, this is the final point from the New York Times story, Democrats found fresh fuel for their No Kings slogan. I'm not quite sure what that means. I think it's always good. 5 points, right? But I think the New York Times missed some of the most important takeaways about this. Again, as I said earlier, there is momentum. One, June of last year, the No Kings rally, 5 million people. October, 7 million. This time, 8 million. There's a lot of momentum, and Trump's policies are only making people more and more riled up, more and more inclined to want to exercise their First Amendment right while it still exists to say, no, this is not acceptable. A little more about the rally here in Des Moines. There was a good article in the Iowa Capital Dispatch about it. Dalton Roberts was quoted in the article. He's a veteran, and he said it was his first time coming to one of the demonstrations. He said, quote, I've been tired sitting around just complaining about it to myself and friends. And he got involved. Good. Another person quoted, also a combat veteran, Jackie Tessin. She said she had learned about the start of military action in Iran, and it scared her because the life of one of her husband's best friends is deployed in Kuwait. And of course, Kuwait is where an Iranian missile struck a facility, killing two Iowa soldiers. So this is starting to hit home. I mean, this is one reason the peace movement took off during the Vietnam War. People started seeing how it was affecting them, their friends, their communities, their families. And I will add to that that there are some people who are also motivated by how it affects people around the world. And speaking of people from around the world, my favorite American, Pope Leo, at a, I believe it was a mass, but anyway, on Sunday, last Sunday, he said that God ignores the prayers of leaders who wage war and have, quote, hands full of blood. And he said that as thousands of additional U.S. troops were being sent to the Middle East. And also after Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth prayed for violence against enemies who deserve, quote, no mercy. Yeah, this was a Palm Sunday Mass in St. Peter's Square. And the Pope said that the conflict between Iran, Israel, and the U.S. was, quote, atrocious, and that Jesus could not be used to justify war. Quoting the Pope again, this is our God, Jesus, King of Peace, who rejects war, whom no one can use to justify war. He does not listen to the prayers of those who wage war, but rejects them. Now, the Pope did not name Hegseth or anyone else by name. He did call out Iran, Israel, and the U.S. for the war. He said that leaders on all sides of the conflict have used religion to try to justify their actions. That's certainly true of the Iranian, theocratic government. And it's been true of the U.S. in the past. It's certainly true of Israel. What's happening there is crazy. Not just now, but over the past 50 years or more, 70 years. So I think the Pope was probably referring to what Pete Hegseth said last week. And I believe this was said at a church service. Quote, let every round, by round meaning bullet, bomb, weapon, let every round find its mark against the enemies of righteousness and our great nation. Give them wisdom in every decision, endurance for the trial ahead, unbreakable unity, and overwhelming violence of action against those who deserve no mercy. Overwhelming violence of action. This man is sick. This man should not be in charge of the Department of Defense or anything for that matter. Maybe put him in charge of a beer party maybe. But I mean, this man is sick. This man does. To have this guy in charge is incredible. And more to the point, his religious affiliation is with the Communion of Reformed Evangelical Churches, and the founder of that church is a Christian nationalist. So I mean, I see this kind of talk, this kind of quote leadership, this bombastic militaristic, demeanor clothed in some kind of, quasi-religious robe. I see it as inspiring more and more people to turn out and try to respond to what's going on. So The Guardian had a good story relevant to all this. It asked, why is there no peace movement in the U.S. right now? And there is a peace movement. It's just a heck of a lot smaller than it was back in the 80s, 70s and 80s, and a heck of a lot smaller than it needs to be. The Guardian points out that the war on Iran is the most unpopular a U.S. war has ever been at its onset. But, pointing out, this dramatic shift in sentiment has not yet translated into organized anti-war opposition. Okay, well, maybe we saw the front end of that this past weekend. Again, a million more people turning out for the No Kings at rallies than were present in October of last year. And I think that's important. How movements form, how they gel, how they come together, how they broaden. It's a challenge. And I think looking at what happened to the peace movement in the 70s and especially in the 80s is really really instructive. I mean, it took a lot of grassroots efforts. There was some national involvement, and I can go into detail about that. Some of that was not so good, by the way. It was the really local stuff, and it was, activist groups, for example, at the Nevada test site, people on the ground there organizing local groups from around the country to come and participate in protests that helped lead to a nuclear test ban. It was some activists focusing on installations in their communities, like the Strategic Air Command in Omaha. Like Rocky Flats, like the Hanford nuclear site in Washington, specific locations that drew people from nearby to focus on why that particular facility or installation or activity was contributing to building, you know, escalating militarism, was contributing to the Vietnam War, and then beyond that to the escalation of nuclear weapons. If the peace movement can start figuring out, you know, where those local points of, you know, those local points are that can, you know, get people to understand that, hey, your community is part of this, without demonizing the people who work there. That's really important. It's really important to make sure that we separate the personnel, the people doing the work, because that's what they have to do to survive, and the policy behind what makes that place important to the continued militarization of our country. So I you know, that's my two cents worth for what it's worth. I also think beyond that, we need, I could say a lot more about this, but I'm going to try to be brief. We'll talk about it more on other occasions. We have before. The importance of living counterculturally. The way I see it, yeah, Trump is horrible, but he's a symptom of a bigger problem. And he is a direct result of practices, policies, and lifestyles that have enabled this kind of a person to become so powerful. And again, I can say a lot more about this, but I want to be really clear, really quick here. The five things that I would recommend you do, all of us do, you know, grow some of your own food, as much of it as possible, and then support those farmers who are doing that. I mean, part of this is just trying to say no to a system that allows somebody like Donald Trump to become powerful. And again, part of the system that allows that is this consolidation within our economy, and you see it no more clearly than within the agricultural community. I mean, I almost use the word community in jest there, because in some ways there's very little. I mean, just looking around Iowa, so much of Iowa has been vacated because farms have gotten bigger and bigger. More and more corporations are owning and operating them. There are still family farmers, of course, but they're struggling and it's tough. So yeah, support the local farmers who are growing food. Grow food yourself, one. Two, use cash and barter. Again, the more we allow ourselves to get sucked into the digital economy, the more we allow third-party entities like PayPal, Stripe, Venmo to take a percentage of whatever we want to spend, or if we're receiving donations, what we receive, that empowers these big corporate entities and takes money and resources away from either the local business we're spending money at or the nonprofit that we're trying to support. Tied in with that, shop local. You know, I mean, it's hard. It takes effort, for example, to figure out where you're going to buy razor blades other than Walgreens. And that's why I offer that as an example, because I haven't figured that one out yet. Nearly everything else I do, and Kathy as well, is at a locally owned business. It takes some effort. It's really important. Do that. You know, don't buy from Amazon. Find that local bookstore. Find that local venue that's going to provide that same product, maybe even at a slightly higher price. That's okay. It's okay if you have to pay a little bit more. It's okay to do that, because you're making a stronger statement and contributing more to the local economy. Fourth, pollute less. I know it's hard to do. I know it's the big offenders that really are the problem. That's why we need policies to rein them in. But we all need to do our part. And you feel so much more, I can speak for myself. I feel so much more wholesome if I am, you know, not using plastic, if I can avoid it, driving and flying less often, you know, just trying to find ways of not living in a way that contaminates our world and that negatively impacts people, not just in our community, but around the world. And five, and perhaps most importantly, be a part of the bigger political solution. Yeah, the 2026 election's really, really important. I can't say enough about how important it is that people mobilize to support candidates that they believe in, that they believe are going to restore some of the rights that we've seen lost. But do more than that. Again, yeah, being part of the bigger solution means going to No Kings rallies, but that's entry-level stuff. Go, you know, spend 2 hours getting pumped up, you know, letting the world know that we're not going quietly into this slide into authoritarianism, but then take it to the next step. You got to do more than that. Hey, folks, this is Ed Fallon. I got to take a short break. Thanks for putting up with my sermonette. When we come back, we got more conversation for you here on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here. And thanks to our partners, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures great and small for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, so big news out of New Mexico and California regarding social media and its addictive elements. I was surprised at how these played out, but I have a feeling this will not be the last time. Again, two big cases just within 1 week. The first in New Mexico, where the judge and jury ordered Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, ordered them to pay $375 million to a victim. The jury had found that the company had misled consumers about the safety of its platforms, and that included, you know, sexual exploitation. So yeah, a New Mexico jury last week ordered Meta to pay that amount. It was the first jury trial to find Meta liable for acts committed on its platform. And that was brought by the state's attorney general back in December of 2023, so it took a while for that to work through the court system. Now, The Guardian, to its credit, did a two-year investigation, and that was published back in April of last year, revealing how Facebook and Instagram had become marketplaces for child sex trafficking. And that investigation was cited in the trial. Quoting the attorney general from New Mexico, "The jury's verdict is an historic victory for every child and family who has paid the price for Meta's choice to put profits over a kid's safety. Meta executives knew their products harmed children, yet they disregarded warnings from their own employees and lied to the public about what they knew. Today, the jury joined families, educators, and child safety experts in saying enough is enough." I just wonder how many more cases like this we're going to see. But again, the second one last week was California. And there, Meta and YouTube, Meta and YouTube were found liable for deliberately designing addictive products that hooked a young user and led to her being harmed. That was a Los Angeles jury. The jury awarded the plaintiff in the case $6 million, with Meta to pay 70% and YouTube 30%. It took nearly 9 days of deliberation for the Los Angeles jury to reach its verdict. And the lawsuit, which is again over the social media's alleged harm to young people, was the first of its kind to go to trial.
but again, concurrently, ruling out of New Mexico as well. So over the course of the six-week trial, 6 weeks, my gosh, that took place in Los Angeles, a jurors heard from top executives at Meta and YouTube. They heard from whistleblowers, expert witnesses on social media and addiction. And they also heard from the 20-year-old woman at the center of the lawsuit who has gone by the initials KGM for court proceedings. KGM's lawyers say her experience is emblematic of what tens of thousands of young people have faced on social media and in their offline lives. The plaintiffs argue their arguments were similar to what we saw back in the 1990s against Big Tobacco. Now, you know, I remember those very clearly too. I was a state lawmaker and I remember the settlements. The settlements were huge. Of course, you know, Big Tobacco is still out there. They found new targets and new ways of purveying their products. But the lawsuits were focused on the tobacco's addictive qualities and also the tobacco companies, you know, public denials about any danger from their product, despite them actually knowing that there was harm being caused. And you know, I would argue too that we saw the same thing attempted against Big Oil, because Exxon knew back in the 1970s that its product, fossil fuels, were going to cause climate change. They knew this. They did the research, they figured it out, and then they just proceeded to lie about it. And they buried it, and they went on and with a PR campaign that said nothing to worry about here. So again, I'm still waiting for the day when Big Oil is going to be held accountable. But apparently, that's not happening right now. But big tech is having its day. Again, the lawsuit discovered that some of the features that were in the platforms developed by these social media companies were designed to be addictive. And one example was the infinitely scrollable feed, the video autoplay. And those are designed to keep people on the apps and make it more addictive. You know, I'm not a person inclined to addictive behavior, but I get this. If I'm just chilling out and need a break from whatever work I'm doing, sit down, check my phone. Maybe I'll check for a message on Facebook or email. But yeah, you get into Facebook and suddenly there's a great little feed about an Irish musician that is captivating. I like that. I want to go back and hear more of that. You know, that's pretty harmless, right? Well, you know, there was a time when I was very intrigued by big animals in Africa, and they were running away from and eating each other. And once I watched a couple of those videos, I started getting lots of big animal videos. And, you know, I can see how that could keep you engaged. And I can see why that's important to the company, because if you stay engaged, then you're more inclined to respond favorably to one of their advertisers, you know? But it's creating addictive behavior, and it was done willfully. And, you know, consenting adults ought to be able to say, okay, I've had enough of big animal videos. I know when to draw the line and say I've had enough watching Irish music. But if your kids, and especially if your kids who are being fed stuff that is bad for you, you know, then we got a problem here. And so I think it's instructive that both juries ruled in favor of the plaintiffs. We'll see how this continues. I won't be surprised if we see more lawsuits, and I won't be surprised if we see more pushback against these companies. I do think it may be enough to cause them to change their behavior, to change how they manage their sites, and that will be good. Hey, I got to take a short break. Again, this is Ed Fallon with the Fallon Forum. In a minute, Kathy Burns will come back and join us. We'll be talking about how these grants that were awarded by the USDA prior to Trump 2.0 are now being taken away, even though the work is already being done. Crazy. We'll be back in a minute to talk about that. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Hello and welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact DavidDrakeFamilyPsychiatry.com. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
So big news this last week with the USDA suddenly canceling already issued grants that were already in progress of being applied, staff hired, money spent, suddenly boom, the money's gone. What's going on?
It was a shock to the groups who were operating under these grants to try to help people getting into farming for the first time or learning more about farming. And to me, it's a big blow for local food and food production in general.
And we're talking about $300 million that was cut. And this is all over the country?
Yes, and that the grants were approved nearly 3 years ago.
3 years ago.
And in 2023. And people have been, putting their plans together, enacting them, hiring people, getting infrastructure in place, and boom, it was gone. So the grants are called Increasing Land Capital and Market Access Program.
Great name.
And so it's very long. And it was funded by the American Rescue Plan Act. Again, 50 projects for five-year contracts across the U.S.
So how do you break a contract like that? You mean the contract has been signed, the agreement has been made, it's legally binding both the recipient and the donating entity, the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
How do you break that contract without incurring legal action?
Well, the feds are saying that in looking at the target audiences and the goals of a lot of these grants, they are violating the no DEI allowed, and I'm putting that in my own words.
But the no DEI thing wasn't part of the original. That came in just last year with Donald Trump.
Well, the groups who have lost their funding so suddenly are encouraging people to call their legislators to say this isn't going to work, and we are operating now with no money in projects that are already in place. So these were granted from the USDA Farm Service Agency. According to the website, they launched this program to, it's still on their website, to help underserved producers by increasing land capital and market access. The program funds cooperative agreements, and it states that land access is critical to the success of agriculture, and it goes on and on touting the benefits of these programs, and now suddenly it's a change of heart. But there were two examples that we could point out of the 50 projects. One was in Florida. The target audience for, and it was all across Florida and other states, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, target audience, small farmers, veterans, and women. Obviously, people who don't deserve to be helped at all in the eyes of the new administration. They were developing, and I hope still are developing, small farm and veteran incubator clusters. And that just means that they're helping people get together and develop programs, develop farming spaces, develop market access, and kind of get going and get a lot of local food to people.
Yeah, and I mean that's Trump taking a shot right at his base. I mean, Florida.
Exactly.
That's his,
Exactly. And the other example we can point out is right here in Iowa.
Also a, quote, red state.
Well, and Donald Trump is currently trying to win farmers back. He's, befuddled them with the corn, corn being brought in from, God knows where, and beef prices and lack of markets, and then wanting to give them handouts instead of market access. So this program in Iowa, target audience is BIPOC, Latinx, immigrant, refugee.
Oh, that's all kinds of red flags right there if you're the Trump administration.
If you're the Trump administration. So they are trying to, three Iowa cities with the largest populations of those, Des Moines, Waterloo, Cedar Rapids, to help farmers overcome challenges to building and sustaining their farm and deal with the increasing high cost of land in Iowa.
Hmm. I wonder if it's a Sustainable Iowa Land Trust is the group that's involved with it. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they've approached any of the state level Republican political leaders. I can't imagine that our Congress members or Senator Grassley are happy about this. Maybe they don't care.
I haven't heard how their outreach to the different folks in power are responding, but I know they're reaching out, and according to a post on Facebook from one of the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust board members, Zach Couture, he's done a lot of work in this area with immigrant communities and farming and just some amazing results and really, really big successes. He says that they had given tours to the offices of Zach Nunn. And by the way, Zach Nunn co-sponsored the legislation for this funding, along with Senator Joni Ernst and Senator Chuck Grassley, who at the time that they got the tours of the programs that were in place that they wanted to create more of and do a better job with even, those two senators expressed understanding of the needs for the investment. So that's why Sustainable Iowa Land Trust, other organizations, many across Iowa, across the country, are saying reach out to your legislators and look. There's a list on the USDA Farm Services of the programs.
I will be really surprised if there are not court cases on these. And I will be surprised if those court cases don't go the way of the farmers that have been impacted.
I would be shocked, too. The thing that really gets me also is the pretty boy of the Trump administration, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is promoting all the healthy, local, sustainably, ethically raised foods. This cut goes right against everything he stands for, too.
Oh, well. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Hey, thanks, Kathy. And thanks to my guest today, Randy Evans. Thanks also to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dedeman, Charles Goldman, Kathy, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, Catholic Peace Ministry, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. Finally, thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. Back next week, folks, with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.